are listening to FBC Perspective, a podcast from First Baptist Church, Kelowna.
Hello, welcome to our Perspective podcast, where we talk about things that help us live better lives. My name is Kevin, and I'm really glad you could join us today. If you haven't already, I'd invite you to subscribe to this podcast. And if you enjoy what you hear, if it challenges you and builds you up, give it a like and share it with your friends. That is so appreciated. Today, we're going to be looking into the past in the hopes that we can have some guidance about how to live in this present world we find ourselves in. How do we navigate COVID? And are there lessons that the historic church can teach us that will help us and put things in perspective? We have a guest to help us with that today. His name is Axel Schober. He has a PhD in Reformation history, and also he has been a pastor for over 30 years, and he's just recently retired. So I think he's going to bring us a really interesting perspective today, a perspective that I hope challenges us and encourages us. So Axel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you. Hey, I understand that you are a bit of a soccer fan, and I don't know if you're a fanatic. Are you a fanatic?
Not quite, but close.
And you've done.
I pay close attention. I love the fact that yesterday Canada tied Mexico 1-1 in Mexico City. Incredible feat. So
I was actually unaware of that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's stunning. And I watched portions of the game, and to see Mexico actually on the defensive when they were a home team is almost unheard of. So good for Canada.
Is that the men's or women's team?
Men's team in this
men's
case.
Men's team. Okay. And what attracts you to soccer?
I have sometimes described it to people who don't know a lot about soccer as a chess game where all the pieces move at the same time.
Wow.
And that gets really interesting if you can see it. But you have to train yourself to see what's going on in all the movement.
I'll see soccer from a new perspective now, because I do enjoy chess now and then. So
good.
And you have 5 grandchildren.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't believe it. Where they've cut, the eldest is 7, but 5 in those 7 years between our 2 kids. It's wonderful.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Axel, you've been a pastor and a teacher for a number of years. And I just kind of wonder what has kept you so committed to the church over your lifetime. And now even into your retirement, you're passionate about doing this and still being involved. What's kept you so committed to the church?
You could answer sort of on a horizontal plane and a vertical plane. The horizontal, I've met a lot of wonderful people, and I feel fortunate that I've been able to say along the way that I could probably go into most towns in Western Canada and have a friend there. There's not a lot of people who can say that.
No, that's very true.
And I feel blessed and encouraged. That yes, there's disappointments, but that really helps. And the vertical plane is the sense that that I was called into ministry by Jesus, and on the hard days, that calling really, really matters. And I'm just as passionate and excited about our resurrected Lord as I was when I started. And so when on the days when you don't see the good folk because of other issues, that's what keeps me going.
And you're also passionate about history. Why are you so passionate about history?
I like asking why. And trying to figure out why things happened. We can often, a lot of people don't know much about history, which doesn't help. But sometimes when we do, it's superficial, and we don't get the nuances, we don't see the context, and asking why starts to probe deeper and begin to reflect back to me, and I think sometimes to others as well, the idea that, you know, human nature is basically the same throughout the centuries. Mm. Cultures may change, issues may change, but if you watch for people's motivation, you can learn an awful lot historically. And I actually use that as a pastor as well in sometimes processing important issues within a congregation, but also in personal conversations. Why? Mm-hmm. So I found that sometimes two situations that in the, you know, a personal thing that are similar, still the motivations and contexts are so different. I can't respond the same way. And so asking why?
A lot of wisdom there. What you said reminds me of something I heard once. Before you take a fence down, figure out why it was put up in the first place. It's that question, why, right? So we have wisdom to move forward.
I think that's a good one. Or what I've often said when I taught is ask questions first. You can always get mad later.
Yes. Well, you know, speaking of getting mad, today we're talking about a topic that has been fairly polarizing. And as our listeners are aware, we are still struggling our way through COVID at this time. Yeah. And I remember at the beginning of COVID, there was such a sense of solidarity and goodwill. Do you remember that?
Yes, there was a strong sense of unity.
So. Just, you know, togetherness and support, and you know, we wanted to help each other. And I could remember the feeling of love is the best way I can describe it. But seems like something's happened. Now, a year and a half later, we're still here. We didn't think we would be. I remember thinking when it first started, oh, I wonder if we'll be able to have an Easter service in a month, you know, but here we are. And it feels different. It feels like there's division and bad feelings. And I just wonder what kind of feelings or division you are seeing in the church due to COVID and differing opinions right now.
Well, to me, they're the same kind of issues that we see in the wider world. And that's basically the division over vaccines. There are those who are firmly entrenched in the notion that there's something about the vaccines that is either against their faith, many of them Christians, not all, but many of them are. Mm-hmm. And or contrary to their health,
right?
Yeah. And sometimes that gets mixed together.
Yeah.
And they have that. They feel that very, very strongly.
Yeah.
And then you have others who are pro-vaccine, who see that in the short term, at least, vaccine is making it much less likely to get sick, and if so, to get sick seriously. Mm-hmm. And so the short-term issue, and they get very passionate. And so you could describe it, although there's variations on this, as we have to make sure that everybody who comes to our church services has double vaccination.
Right.
And other people saying...
Yeah,
not coming.
Yeah,
and the first group are often surprised at who might be in that second group.
I know.
And until they don't often talk. Sometimes they don't talk enough to one another.
Man, it's raised all sorts of issues too about the Christian ethic of balancing and the struggle, the tension between individual rights and group responsibility. That's really tough to navigate at the best of times.
Yes, and there are other issues where we can find that. I agree.
Yeah, and I've also noticed this. It seems to have exposed some of the ways we've been practicing our faith. For instance, like this idea that church is something you just come to and consume. And, you know, like a lot of places have tried to just keep that going, but virtually, and it's been really difficult for them to do that. So we're asking questions about how we keep going as a church.
I heard a number of anecdotal pieces that where people, especially sort of in the 40s and below, were keen to see the church do things digitally and were affirming, but then after a few months, they lost interest.
Mm.
and many of them stopped connecting to the digital manifestation. And then you go, okay. So if that's the group you'd think would be the one to most stay with it. And I don't have stats, but I did hear a number of stories along those lines. And so consumer, yeah, maybe in a sense it is consumeristic.
So there's been a lot of division that I think was maybe slightly anticipated, but mostly unanticipated. And it's been challenging for the church. And I wonder if you think this is unprecedented in the history of the church.
No.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can give you a number of episodes. Certainly, the church basically faces calamities throughout its history. And in North America, we've been kind of coddled.
Yeah.
It's been pretty easy to be a Christian for my lifetime. And yet there are parts of the world where it costs to be a Christian. And that's happening right now. And that's basically been the truth throughout the 2000 years. You just have to dig around a little bit, and somewhere, somehow, some Christians are having a tough time navigating what's going on with them or around them. And so not all of it is health related, but in fact, the churches have dealt with plagues and the pandemics repeatedly. I couldn't even begin to tell you them all, but I can give you some highlights if you want.
Yeah, that would be great if you could maybe describe some of them that come to mind for you that are pandemic related, and just tell us how they're similar and what happened.
Yeah, and the responses of the church changed it from in certain instances. So the lessons we can learn from it changed too as a result.
Right.
But there was, we're not even sure what it was. There's guesses, but there were plagues in the Roman Empire when it was strong. And before Christianity became dominant, there was an Antonine plague in 166 AD or 251. They call it the Plague of Cyprian because he was a church leader in Carthage, which is the western part of North Africa. And he helped people deal with that and a persecution that was going on at the same time. And there was probably a connection between the plague and the persecution because a lot of Roman people began to be aware that the empire wasn't as strong as it had been a century earlier and began to blame the growth in Christianity, saying, hey, we're being unfaithful to the pagan gods. We have to restore our classical approach, including our classical faith. And so the plague was bad enough, smallpox maybe, but we're guessing, we don't actually know, that people would expose their friends. We have this written down from sources back then. They pushed their friends out the door into the street and let them die because they had some sense of contagion. And we're thinking that if this person's sick now, they're going to die anyways. Let's push them away.
Yeah, preemptively.
So that we don't die too. And so the Christians were getting an awful lot of blame while they were also going through this plague, whatever it was. Now, here's the really interesting thing, is that Cyprian and other church leaders said, go and serve. Don't lash out. Serve. And throughout this period, not just the plague, but through these several centuries, the church actually became known for the way in which it cared, first for its own poor and sick, but it also began doing the same for the wider community. And so it would go out, and those who died on the street, they'd give a decent burial to. They'd minister to the sick. And some of the Christians doing the ministering also got sick and died. So it was sacrificial, and people knew it.
Wow.
But it helped build the credibility of the faith. They weren't hiding away. And so I think about that sort of period in those series of plagues, because those are two key ones, but there were more, we're feeling a tug between protecting the vulnerable, our seniors, for example, who are in the churches, and going out and ministering when sometimes ministry is at some risk.
Yeah.
And it seems to me we have to have a balance between that. To be headstrong doesn't make sense in taking all sorts of risks, but to not take risks and not care for people, I think we may be missing something here of the spirit of Jesus in responding to the crisis. Now, they had very limited medical systems. There were doctors, but usually you had to pay big bucks. And so most people had no medical care. So the actions of the Christians, even by those who weren't trained, just showing compassion, was very noteworthy in that climate. We have a very advanced medical system, and so it wouldn't have the same transfer. But I am conscious that even before the pandemic hit, people were noting how big a problem loneliness was in our cities.
Yeah.
And the pandemic, with the isolation requirements, magnified this.
Totally.
And I'm thinking that there's got to be a way in which churches can imitate the early church by trying to make connection for people.
Wow, that's a really important point. Now, do you think the early church was united in this, or do you think there was a sense of disunity?
Always there were arguments in church life. So I don't think you could find a period without it. But this became the dominant tone, and not just in a short period of outbreak of plague, but over the longer term. And they stuck with it, or even intensified it during the plague of Cyprian. Are we completely unified? No, but if that were a dominant tone.
So it really sounds like this idea of loving your neighbor as yourself, doesn't it? Because, I mean, if you love your neighbor more than yourself, you're going to be reckless. If you love your neighbor as yourself, you'll take a risk that you would appreciate yourself, but still protect yourself. It sounds like that's what they did.
Well, yeah. And I think they got a pretty good balance on it overall. And it sure made an impression. It's part of the reason why Rome slowly swung around to the Christian faith. So that would be one episode. I could tell you another story.
Yeah, I'd love to hear another story.
In the later part of the Roman Empire, when it was centered in the east in Constantinople, which is now the Turkish city of Istanbul, there were actually 16 different waves of bubonic plague.
16.
16 of them.
Wow.
From 541 to 767. And the first one was often called the Plague of Justinian. And it's estimated that 50 million people died in that plague. So it was huge in terms of its impact. And the thing that historians note about those successive waves is that for a number of people, they gave up on the Christian faith. There was a sense in which, if God isn't protecting us better than this, why? And it was enough of a movement that took notice. On the other hand, for the majority, it increased their faith and their devotion. And they clung more strongly and fiercely, if you will, to Jesus, who died and rose again for us. And I think that sometimes as we get caught up in church life, we deal with the short term, and we need to take a step back and realize, you know, for some people, especially if COVID doesn't subside soon, there may in fact be crisis of faith that emerges from
Absolutely.
This. And we shouldn't be shocked by that.
Well, we, Axel, we hear this. What you're saying jogs my memory a bit. We hear this a lot, especially on Facebook and places, faith over fear, or even not to have fear over faith. And it sounds like that was the struggle of a lot of those Christians as they were grappling with this.
Yeah, I think that's well put. And I think it's important for us as preachers and teachers within the church, and even as everyday Christians, as we encourage one another to sharpen our sense of dependence upon Jesus. Mm. And let others, we don't have to, you know, boast about it, but don't be shy about letting other people understand what motivates us and what keeps us going.
Along that line, though, was there a tendency, because I this is implied a little bit in some people that I've talked to, that if you're a person of faith, you don't need to worry about getting sick. Right? Yeah. Was there that tendency and disappointment?
That's a good question to ask theologians, but in this case, we all have to be theologians. Mm. Because it's very practical. And in fact, it's something that has run through the Christian response to different plagues. Is there were always some who say, we don't need to take care of ourselves. In the 16th century, they used the idea of election or predestination and saying, I'm here as long as God's ordained it. And I can't die a day before that, and I can't last a day beyond that. And so they could get reckless and foolish.
So they had a sense that their day was chosen anyway. So there was
some
a
of
sense,
these people.
Yeah, okay.
But rarely the notable church leaders. The notable church leaders usually try to put it in a more balanced context. And this is true throughout the different stories that I want to tell you today. So,
well, I'd like to hear some more if you have more. I mean, this is just fascinating, the parallels between today and the past.
Well, that's why I like asking why.
Yeah.
But the next one's kind of complex, partly because it gets into the field. It's a pre-runner to the 16th century, and that was my specialty. Mm. And that was called the Black Death. 1348 and 49 hit Europe like a series of explosions. It's estimated 200 million people died in those years and following. Some places, 90% of the community would die. And the way the plague came in, it was carried by rats brought on trading ships from Central Asia through the Black Sea. And these rats carried fleas, and these fleas would get the bug in them, and then they would land on people. And since many homes had rats in the straw thatch and or along the walls and floors, it was really easy to encounter these fleas. And it was quick and ugly. It was smelly and had big pustules that would under the arms or between the legs and could be quite quick. So that so a physician could come to someone who was sick, and the physician was healthy, but he died before the patient.
It could either, that quick?
Yeah, it could be. Oh. Didn't always happen that fast, but it could. So it came like, you may have heard a story like this too, but there was one about a year ago where a healthy man in his 40s went to sleep, and in the morning he was dead. Mm-hmm. And only afterwards did they find out he had COVID. He seemed to be healthy when he went to sleep.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often in the stories we hear.
Right.
Imagine that being common.
Yeah, with visible manifestations of that as well. I mean, that's one of the things that's challenging, I think, for people with COVID is it seems kind of invisible.
Hmm, that's right.
But right. There would be all this visible signs that you've got this plague.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah. So And the recurrences of the plague happened for another three centuries, but weren't as severe as this first go round. And that's in Europe. If you went back into Asia, it actually lasted into the early 20th century in a few pockets.
Oh my goodness. So,
It's been around. Now, go back to the worst of it, the Black Death, they called it, 1348-49, and the century and a half that followed. And notice the time frame I'm giving.
Yeah, that's long.
A century and a half.
Yeah.
A lot of the consequences develop over time. And one of the things we need to do is be humble about thinking we can read the impact of COVID
right
clearly now. I will see.
Yeah, in a month I got this.
Yeah, I think we maybe should be a little bit humble about that.
You're right.
But some of the results of the Black Death are not something to be proud of. First, this was when persecution of the Jews intensified. It was scapegoating. And some horrible things were said, like Jews poisoned wells. And that's why everybody in the town suddenly got sick. And often they would sometimes chase them out of town, but that tended to be the lucky ones, burning down the synagogue or the homes or the businesses with the people inside was more common. And so the 20th century Holocaust had forerunners that were very much done by Christian folks. I mean, there were Christians involved in the Nazi Holocaust, but
yeah,
it wasn't a Christian Holocaust. The Nazis were not Christians.
Right.
But they could point to things that Christians had done.
Yeah.
And of course, you may know where I'm going here, because we've talked about anti-Asian racism mounting because of the origin in China. And I'm all in favor of finding out more about the origin.
But we're looking for a scapegoat, right?
But scapegoating,
yeah,
especially of Asians, it's not on. Not on. So
wow, that's sobering.
That's one outcome. Another one was that a fair number of people, including priests, we would call them pastors, avoided the sick. They ran. They didn't do their job.
Yeah.
And it's a reminder to us that when we have a calling, there's sometimes risk involved.
So it's instead of that go and serve, it was, and love others as yourself. It was that balance was love yourself more than others, you know, preserve yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well put.
Hmm.
So, and again, we have to be careful that we don't so emphasize the protect side of things.
Yeah.
That we don't serve. So here's a fascinating one, and I think you'll see a parallel quite quickly. The Black Death led to a breakdown of the economic system. Now, already trade and commercial business was starting to increase prior, especially in cities, but big cities in that day and age had 8,000 people in it.
Right. Not so 8 million. We need
to keep this in perspective.
Yeah.
There were only a few that were the size of Kelowna, like London or Paris.
Right.
So we need to remember what we're talking about when we talk about cities. But for the most part, as the Black Death hit, most people were still tied to the land in what was called the feudal system, which was a way of everybody being more secure in a very insecure world, where the Lord had people underneath him sworn to loyalty, and in exchange would allow them to work land that would feed their family. And as long as that provided for more security than any other option,
yeah,
it stuck, and it stuck for centuries. Well, when the Black Death hit, it meant for very little freedom of movement for most people. When the Black Death hit, all of a sudden, there were get this word, labor shortages.
Right.
You hear this all the time.
Yes, now. Absolutely.
And people could just walk away from their feudal obligations and try their luck in the cities.
Did they also run out of toilet paper?
I don't think that was the issue then. And so they would go, and many of them would make a success. Now, as always, people, not everyone getting to the city ended up happy about their move. But many benefited and had more to gain than they had previously working the land as a feudal vassal.
So there was an economic shift that happened.
Yep. And part of the struggle with the Protestant Reformation was those who tended to be on the reforming side were more in tune with the new economy.
Huh.
They were better educated. They saw the advantages of having greater lay involvement in the church. And they read the Bible for themselves. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we have to be careful of is protecting the old economy. Like, for example, we all, I'm pretty sure, use cash way less than we did 2 years ago.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's a shift in the economic system. Now, can that be misused? Yes. Hmm. And we should be alert to that possibility and guard against it. Hmm. Agreed. Hmm. But I don't think it'll help us, especially if we have kids who are going to be rising in the new economy. If we just say everything was better the old way, hmm. even when it was, well, yeah. that isn't the way we're right. going to live now.
Yeah, pining for the past doesn't bring it back, does it?
Exactly. And as the 16th century Reformations demonstrated, there's ways of building on the new movement that we can benefit as churches, as Christian folk, in our families and in our communities. So there is some sense in which we should be open to this. Yes, it needs to be consistent with our scriptural calling mm-hmm. as Christians, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean it has to be the old way.
Right.
So there was a breakdown of the economic system. It caused strife. And it's causing strife now. Mm-hmm. It also represented opportunity. Mm-hmm. Now, one other thing. Did you want to say something, Kevin?
Well, I was going to say that you've really touched on this a lot throughout, and I really appreciate that. You know, one of the questions I had was, what can we learn from the past that helps us navigate the present and the future? And I think you've really touched on that. But are there like a couple of key points that you want to make about that?
Well, my concern is we're so early on, like it was a century and a half developing, and it'll happen faster now than then. Mm-hmm. But we're so early on, I don't know that I feel like I can tell you how we ought to do this. I think we need to be open.
You know, I think I've heard you say, though, to this is very helpful, actually, just looking at the past and being aware of how they had to be fluid and willing to change with the times and to be attentive to opportunities to love your neighbor as yourself, to look for those opportunities. Historically, they did that. And today we can do that. And to be aware of putting ourselves above others.
Yeah.
Those sound like great lessons to me.
Well, and I think they are too. And always we're tempted to resist, and some within the church do. And so we have to navigate that, trying to treat people with respect, but that doesn't necessarily mean we get dictated to by all their concerns either.
Yeah,
so it's an interesting tightrope at times.
Well, I know this is going to be a bit of a guess for you, just based on what you said previously about our journey through this, but do you think it's possible for the church to come out stronger?
Oh, yeah.
And how do you see the lessons of the past contributing to that information, to that opinion?
Well, the fact is that while often the people who resist make a lot of noise, And sometimes they're those who are in the influential leadership positions. They were in the 16th century. There are always Christians around who are saying, I'm not sure that's the best way to do it. And so some of even our sister churches have moved in the direction of decentralizing their church and making it more a home-based set of groups that are connected, but also have their own sphere of ministry, influence, fellowship, support. And so instead of a church of 200 gathering every Sunday morning, they were there now 10 churches roughly 20 people each spread around the town.
Which sounds like in our current situation could be a lot safer, I guess we could say that. It's a lot more controlled variables, isn't it?
Yeah. And a better chance to connect with neighbors because it's in the home. So that isn't necessarily the only way, but it's certainly a possibility.
You know, one thing that's I've noticed, and this is certainly not really a lesson from the past directly because they didn't have this option, but certainly a lesson from flexibility is just I've learned the importance of technology. I mean, I think I was a little bit hostile to this whole idea of streaming. My mistake, and I've now see it as an inclusive thing. I mean, we have had a lot of our shut-ins more connected than they ever have been, if you can believe that.
We found that too before I retired.
Yeah.
And I said publicly that we certainly weren't a candidate for expertise in the digital world when the pandemic started.
Yeah.
But we somehow navigated it so that for most of the people in the church, it still was church, both in terms of worship and personal connection. And that seemed to be a success. And I think it's similar to what you described in your setting. So,
well, I do thank you for giving us a sense of hope. I know we could talk a lot about this, and I have a sense that maybe I should have you as a guest again to go further into this, but I feel a sense of hope from the past that you've conveyed. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, pleasure. Yeah.
I do have one last question for you, and that is this, because our podcast is about talking about things that help us live better lives, and I wonder if there's something that's helped you live a better life and why.
Well, since I'm a historian, it's easy for me to look to the past and find things that strengthen me. And Ulrich Zwingli was one of those Protestant reformers in the 16th century, and he got the plague it was 1519 when he got the plague, actually, and he nearly died. And his sense of relying on God's word in the Bible was just beginning to form then, and becoming the strong biblical preacher in Zurich, Switzerland. Was still ahead of him. But catching the plague was so important to his spiritual development.
Really?
And, well, I'm going to read you a poem he wrote. It's called Plague Song. Mm-hmm. And the first four stanzas describe the early segment of when he was sick. The next four about how desperate he felt at the height of having this bubonic disease. And then when he recovered, the last four stanzas, and it talks about relying on Christ, which I think is what I would commend to many people as we try and navigate all these questions and try to maintain a sense of hope. So if I could read that to you,
I'd love to hear it.
Help me, O Lord, my strength and rock. Low at the door, I hear death's knock. Uplift thine arm once pierced for me that conquered death and set me free. Yet if thy voice in life's midday recalls my soul, then I obey. In faith and hope, earth I resign, secure of heaven, for I am thine. My pains increase, haste to console. for fear and woe seize body and soul. Death is at hand, my senses fail, my tongue is dumb, now Christ prevail. Though Satan strains to snatch his prey, I feel his grasp, must I give way? He harms me not, I fear no loss, for here I lie beneath thy cross. My God, my Lord, healed by the hand, upon the earth once more I stand. Let sin no more rule over me, my mouth shall sing alone to thee. Though now delayed, my hour will come, involved perchance in deeper gloom, but let it come. With joy I'll rise and bear my yoke straight to the skies.
Well, that was very inspiring and very pertinent to today. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I wanted to share that with you, so I'm glad it was inspiring for you. That's great.
Oh, thank you. Hey, I just really appreciated what you offered to our listeners, and I think it's really an important conversation, and I totally agree with you about the wisdom from the past. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Kevin.
Oh, you're so welcome.
May God bless you and your church and your listeners. So
thank you, Axel. Thank you so much for joining us today for that great conversation. It has been great to talk about things that can help us live better lives. I look forward to talking to you again next time. But until then, keep the faith and live in hope.
Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe so that you can catch all our future episodes. You can search for us as FBC Perspective on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.